Hello and welcome to the College Football Experience Podcast. My name is David Capel. Kent, it's a new year, 2022. We have one college football game remaining, and it's the one for all the marbles. We'll jump into that in a little bit. But let's start with things that we've learned lately, since it's been a week or so since we talked. And we'll start with you. And I think I know what this is going to be about, with the continued blowouts in the college football semifinals.
Yeah, it continues every year. And the bigger argument is, should we make it 12 teams or 8 teams or 6 teams? And look, maybe for the first round or two, it would be more exciting. But when we get to the Final Four, or we get to, you know, those type of teams, it's almost always two blowouts. In the 16 playoff games that we've had now for semifinals, 13 of them have been outright blowouts. The average margin of victory for all 16 games is over 20 points. Ugh. And you saw it in these two games. That's not to say anything against Cincinnati or Michigan. Frankly, I thought that Cincinnati performed fairly well compared to their talent. When you look on the other side of what Bama's talent is, Michigan was a disappointment, but that's just what we have. Whether it's Ohio State getting blown out last year, Notre Dame's gotten blown out a couple times, Clemson was on the other end of it last year against Ohio State, Oklahoma, we've seen them routinely get blown out. It's very hard to win in the semifinals if you're not one of the top two or three most talented teams. So it's just more of a credit on what Georgia and Bama have done. And you saw the separation early in both games. Bama went right down the field, ran the ball down the throat of Cincinnati. And then for Georgia, everything they wanted to do on both sides of the football, they were able to accomplish against a really good Michigan team. Not a team that was lucky to get in. Michigan was a team that earned their right to get in. But year in and year out, David, we continue to see the semifinals are pretty much two blowouts, certainly one out of two blowouts. And then when we get to the championship game, that's when we see the better matchup.
Yeah, I'm looking better matchup, but you're getting 42-20, 45-40, 35-31, like uncharacteristically higher scoring games. The funny thing, the lowest scoring game, 26-23, was an overtime game, Alabama-Georgia, which we're getting again this year. But then you get 44-16, 42-25, 52-24. So the last 3 years of the championship game have been blowouts too. Let's not forget that. But, you know, I'm looking over all of the results for these semifinals. Year one, that Alabama Ohio State 12 versus or 1-4, that was an exciting game. You had the double overtime Georgia Oklahoma game. There's three, maybe four games in here that have been worth watching. The rest of them have just been so lopsided. And you know, I don't think it's an expansion problem. It's a, we need to stop funneling all of the college football players into Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. That's the problem.
Well, the other thing, too, is I feel like if you removed just Alabama as a national threat, the rest of it would be fairly normal, meaning Ohio State over the last decade has been similar to like what Steve Spurrier's Florida Gators were in the sure. 90s, or maybe even Florida State, where like you could win one or two, but you're not winning and you're not playing for the title every year. Clemson could have been the equivalent of like Nebraska or maybe Miami in the early 2000s.
Hot for a decade.
But yeah. When you have a team like Alabama that has just been so much above everybody, they've averaged over 12 wins a season under Nick Saban since he came there. And then you start to break down just what they do in the hardest conference. It just stands out more. So I think that whenever people
he's literally, and this is funny to say, but he's the Gino Auriemma of college football. You know, like he's just so far and above a level above everyone else that it almost feels like they're playing a different sport at times.
Yeah, and even this year, for as much as we've criticized Alabama at times of, you know, looking mediocre against the Florida Gators or LSU or Arkansas, or certainly in the Auburn game
where
A&M, they're still playing for the national championship and they're 13-1 and they've already beaten the Georgia Bulldogs, who they'll play again. So nothing about this program seems like it's struggling or starting to fall down. So whenever you start to look at these, I think if you removed Bama from the equation, which you clearly can't do, there would be a lot more close playoff games, because then all of a sudden your 5 and 6 seeds would be the teams that would get in, and your 2 and 3 seeds would not be Nick Saban and Alabama, but they're just better than everybody, and they continue to be better than everybody. And because of that, you can show up and perform well. I look at Notre Dame last year, which as of the last 2 years is the closest playoff game. when Notre Dame played Bama and lost by 17 in the Rose Bowl, but they were never really in the game. Bama controlled it. Bama dominated the game, and yet they still won by 17 points, and Notre Dame felt like they actually played a pretty solid game. So that's the difference, is you have to play so well, unless you're Georgia or A&M this year or Clemson when they were rolling with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Those are the only teams, and I guess you got to throw in the 2014 Ohio State team that beat them and won it all. But you have to play so well to beat Nick Saban in the biggest games of the year, and very few programs are capable of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, we've learned our lesson to not bet against them. We'll see you make that mistake again in your best bet, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's move down to some of the New Year's Six Bowl games, specifically one of the most exciting ones that took place right in our backyard, the Ohio State-Utah Rose Bowl. And Chris Olave opts out, and everyone's talking, you know, we'll get down to that in a second about the opt-outs. But instead, you have Marvin Harrison Jr. and Smith and Jigba going in and getting six total touchdowns between the two of them. Video game numbers for Smith and Jigba was 346 receiving yards in that game. And it made for actually a really exciting game. It was great to see those guys step up. But, man, I kind of tuned in. I had been watching, but I tuned into his, like, how great he was doing early in the fourth quarter. And then every catch he had, and he had a big one still later in that game to really set that mark for a bowl record. And it was just so exciting. That was a really fun game to watch.
It was a great performance by Utah in the first half. The second half, the offense just couldn't hold up long term. This is an Ohio State defense.
Losing Cam Rising also, just absolute backbreaker.
But even then, with that loss, they still went down.
And they scored that one more touchdown, too.
Yeah, they scored the touchdown late where I thought if they would have scored with about 30 seconds left, I thought you go for two and just try to win right there. But the fact that they scored with almost 2 minutes left, you had to kick the extra point. And you sort of knew Ohio State was going to have a shot to either kick a game-winning field goal or, if not, score. You know, I was down in the state of Florida, and I said to my older brother when Utah scored, he goes, I think Ohio State will win with a field goal. And I said, I don't think it's going to go down to a field goal. I think they'll score a touchdown, and that will be it. Of course, they ended up playing their cards right, kicking the game-winning field goal, and that was the ball game. But Utah,
if you were a Cincinnati Bengals and Ohio State fan, which is probably a very big cross section of a Venn diagram, you were like, man, they either need to – they're going to let us score and try to run the ball back down with, you know, with Patrick Mahomes or with whatever Utah's been doing this whole game. And instead, both of them make the – seemingly and endingly right move of salting it away, getting that kickoff as time expires or close to, and winning those games by three instead of the seven that you probably should have.
Yeah, and I watched this game, and Smith and Jigba, you mentioned Garrett Wilson out, Chris Olave out. Those are two future top two or three receivers in next year's draft, and Smith and Jigba steps right in. He's as talented as both of those guys. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., who had only had five catches all season, for justifiably so, he was their fifth receiver.
Right.
You know, he had three touchdowns. So just an awesome performance. I remember watching the Rose Bowl back the year before the Vince Young USC showdown was Texas and Michigan. And Steve Breston in that game, who was a local kid, went to Woodland Hills High School, was a star quarterback, went up to Michigan. He broke the yardage record for the Rose Bowl in that game because he was a return man and a receiver. And then Vince Young the following year broke Steve Breston's record in that game. Smith and Jigba was the most impressive performance I've seen since those two in the Rose Bowl. And we've had some great performances along the way. So good on Ohio State. A nice win for them, even with their opt-outs. And for Utah, they performed admirably. It would have been awesome for them to get that win and really put the best season of their program history, in my opinion, because even though they lost a few games, if they could have won that game and won the Rose Bowl, I think that would have meant more than the Fiesta Bowl win over Pitt when you're in the Mountain West. But Kyle Whittingham continues to do it. He's as consistent a coach as there is in the country, and certainly as consistent a coach as there is on the West Coast. And yet it still wasn't
for
enough.
Now.
Yeah,
for
it still
now.
Wasn't enough.
By the way, another comparison to the Cincinnati and Ohio State fans. They watch They watch Smith and Jigba on Saturday, and then on Sunday they get Jamar Chase putting up 240, 50 yards and three touchdowns against Kansas City. So they had quite a weekend in terms of last second finishes and just otherworldly performances from their wide receivers. So
now, of course, if you happen to be the diehard Bearcat that doesn't like the state power in Ohio State, then that was tougher to swallow. But again, I do want to say, Cincinnati and Michigan did earn the rights to be there. Michigan knocked off Ohio State and killed Iowa. And Cincinnati beat Notre Dame by double digits on the road in South Bend. Both of those teams have nothing to be ashamed of based on them losing to Georgia and Bama. The same way Utah has nothing to be ashamed of losing by three to Ohio State in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other New Year's Six bowl games. We had Baylor with a win over Ole Miss. Oklahoma State coming back and having an exciting final few minutes of that Notre Dame game or against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. Which was your favorite New Year's Six bowl game this year?
Well, it had to be the Rose Bowl because it was just the most exciting. If Notre Dame would have won, that would have been by default my favorite. You know, I did send out the text to some people and said that Notre Dame hasn't lost a game since 2016. And I thought Oklahoma State would make it closer. I did not think the game was over, but I just thought it was an interesting stat that I heard the day before. And then Notre Dame did blow that game. It was great coaching by Oklahoma State, the way they adjusted in the second half. They tired out the Notre Dame defense. The offense for Notre Dame had 5 3 and outs that went under a minute of each possession. They were basically playing the Mike Leach air raid the entire game, and that worked for a half. It did not work for the second half, and good on Oklahoma State. I don't think that loss for Notre Dame has any indication on what Marcus Freeman will be as a coach or what it does for Notre Dame as a program. It would have been nice to get that New Year's Six win and finally punch their ticket in one of those big games, but they're big tester up ahead whenever you get in the next season. This was a game where Notre Dame didn't even really have a defensive coordinator calling the plays. Marcus Freeman was more of the head coach, CEO. The defensive line coach was calling in the plays. He has never done that before. So it was a little bit of an odd transition. They'll get that in place heading into next fall for sure. And then for the Baylor win, good on the Big 12. You had Oklahoma State win a New Year's Six game over a top five Notre Dame. And then you had Baylor defeat a top 10 Ole Miss, in which Matt Corral gets hurt. Good for him. It wasn't a serious injury. But Baylor wins the Big 12. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Oklahoma State. They beat top 10 Ole Miss. Great season for Dave Aranda. And Aranda is one of those coaches that he's defense first. That's the way his program will always be. And it's kind of refreshing in 2021, in the 2022, that you actually get a coach that seemingly values defense as the foremost authority of his program. And then if the offense shows up here and there, that's okay. Nowadays, you're seeing it where it's just offense, 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 and then you hope your defense doesn't allow 45 points. That's not going to be the way Dave Aranda is. And remember, he turned down a lot of big jobs this offseason. Now, maybe, what if we're going to get to Harbaugh later? But if Harbaugh leaves, is Aranda a candidate there? It doesn't seem like he wants to leave Baylor. And maybe he's looking at it as, look at the Big 12 going forward. OU's gone. Texas is gone. I can start building our program up, and my top competition will be Texas Tech in the state, Oklahoma State above us in Oklahoma, and then TCU, Houston, and those type of programs. I think he looks at Baylor as, we could be one of the two best teams in this conference as soon as those teams leave, and we're already one of the two best. So I like the direction that Dave Aranda has put this Baylor program in, and we know what Mike Leach does. We know what Mike Gundy does at Oklahoma State, and he wins games. I mean, he's had a track record at Oklahoma State. I saw a stat during the game where they showed a split screen. Marcus Freeman, first game as head coach. Mike Gundy, 218th game as head coach. That's a big difference. You expect Mike Gundy to adjust in that circumstance. And Oklahoma State, no matter what, always seems to find a way to win 9 or 10 or sometimes 11 or 12 games. And that's where they got this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, you brought up how the Big 12 is feeling. Don't forget Oklahoma coming in and getting that win over a higher ranked at the time, Oregon. And then that really segues into the Pac-12, who went Ofer in the bowls.
Yeah, they haven't won a bowl game now since 2019.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive how bad they were. I mean, granted, in some tougher games like that Oklahoma game, like that Ohio State game, but the fact that no one won, that Central Michigan comes into the Sun Bowl last minute and absolutely lays waste to Washington State, seeing stuff like that is just tough to see. You're obviously your premier program not even making a bowl game is always nice. Utah State beating Oregon State in LA, like, what are we doing here? So it's been a tough little road for Pac-12 to hoe, but hopefully there's some brighter days ahead. And like you said, good on the Big 12. And then I love this happens every single year, Kent, is the SEC is starts off in the lower tier bowls, 0 for 2, 1 for 3, 1 for 4. And then they even it up by Alabama winning two games, by Georgia winning a game, by, it's like they don't care about those lower tier games. They're all in the playoff. Those are the ones that matter. And they tend to win those ones. So,
Yeah, and they tend to win on New Year's Day when they get up against the Big Ten. You saw Arkansas demolish Penn State. You saw Kentucky beat Iowa. Obviously,
Georgia over
you look at
Michigan.
what Georgia did to Michigan. They win those type of games. I don't think a lot of the conference cared a whole lot. I mean, the Tennessee Purdue game was one. That was a big win for the Big Ten over an SEC team. But outside of that, I don't think a lot of the lower tier SEC teams, especially you watch Florida against UCF. It was about 15 minutes into that game that you thought Florida just doesn't want to be here. Emory Jones, who was transferring, was the starting quarterback in that game. So that's just not a good situation. And then you look at the big teams, those are the teams that want to show up and play well, and they did pretty well. But overall, we know what the SEC is. It's they get to the national championship game and they win national championships. No matter who wins Monday night, it'll now be 12 of the last 16 national
Jeez.
championships will be out of the SEC. And if Georgia wins, they become the fifth different program to win a national title. Auburn has won one. They also lost one. Georgia has lost one. They have a chance to win one. Bama's won, I think, six under Saban. It's either six or seven at this point. I lose track. Florida with Urban Meyer won a couple. And then, of course, LSU. When LSU's good, they're really good. And they've won a few, including that 2019 team 2 years ago that was as good as any that we've seen. So the SEC, it's not just Alabama in that regard. I think sometimes you get people that are fans of other programs or conferences, and they think it's only Alabama that's done it. Even though Alabama has done it the most, when you have Florida with multiple, LSU with multiple, Auburn and Georgia with multiple title appearances, it's not just a one-team conference.
No, but Alabama has won in 09 and won in 2022, or has been there in 09 and 2022. You're talking 13 years where, LSU is the only other one that really has that big gap, and that was between different coaches. But, Florida had its time back in the late 2000s.
Right. But the only other
Nobody's done as
conference,
consistently.
the only other conference that's had multiple teams play for a national championship, there's actually two, is the Big 12, where you had Texas play for a national championship in in Saban's first year that he won since his SEC run. And then Oklahoma has played. And then the ACC, you had Florida State make the title game and beat Auburn. And then Clemson has played for four. So overall, the Pac-12, the only team is Oregon twice, and they lost both times. And then in the Big Ten, it's Ohio State's the only team, and they've made it three times or four times and won one. So overall, it's those conferences are way more the one team conferences
Sure,
as
yeah.
opposed to the SEC, who's had at this point five different teams potentially that's won it all if Georgia can get there on Monday.
Yeah. So, all right, let's some other fun bowl games earlier on in the year, or on earlier on in the bowl season. But obviously a really good slate of New Year's Six games. And I know I like it when the playoff is at the Rose Bowl, but I also kind of I think that it has enough weight on its own that it's better when it's not a playoff game, and that it's another game that kind of still matters. Whereas some of the other ones, like, they don't hold quite as much weight as that Rose Bowl. So, but we've talked about Ohio State. Let's talk, have a little bit of a discussion about opt-outs. And there was Herbstreit and the ESPN guys kind of, everyone calling them old guy or, having their dad moments. And then Matt Corral obviously gets injured in his game, and that fuels the fire even more about this discussion. But, you know, I kind of land a little bit on the side of the pardon my take guys, and it's whatever the guys decide is the right decision. You know, there's no wrong really decision on this. As a fan, sure, we'd love to have these guys play in these games because we like watching the best players we can. But if you think it's best for you to sit out, then you should sit out. And if you think it's best for you to get one more game in with your team, get one more game in your with your team. It's ultimately your decision. I kind of land on that side. How about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that too. I do think it's funny that this year we have one more week left in the NFL season and the overwhelming favorite for offensive rookie of the year is Ja'Marr Chase. He sat out the entire 2020 season. And then the odds on favorite for defensive is Micah Parsons, and he sat out the full 2020 season. Now, there was COVID in play. I don't know if they would have done it otherwise, but it just shows you, you can opt out, you can get ready for the draft, and the NFL is still there for you, and they'll take you in. And if you're good, you're going to play. You're going to put up numbers. And I look at it as I will be interested to see if this starts happening in the playoffs. I would hope that that doesn't happen because I do start to look at Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Peach Bowl, and Fiesta Bowl this year. For the most part, were not meaningful bowl games for a lot of those teams, where it would have been nice for Notre Dame with a first-time coach, you get that win. Baylor's trying to build its program, or Ole Miss. Pitt hadn't been there, but you saw their best quarterback out. Those games don't mean as much if players aren't playing in those. We have yet to see a guy in the playoff that has sat out. I think that will eventually happen, and when that happens, maybe people start to change their tune a little bit. But overall, it's a hard thing. And the thing for Howard and Herbstreit that kind of, it didn't offend me, but it did annoy me, was the fact that they know why this is happening. Sure. And it's the agents that are dictating to the players, you're good to go, you're not playing for a championship, it's time to start training. And I know that this is a fact. Like, I know that that's what's happening with players that are in the non-playoffs. And Herbstreit and Howard know that. There's no way that I know that and they don't. And so I thought it was a little bit disingenuous that they're on the air and that they're talking about these players not loving the game, where it's not the players really making these calls. Now, when push comes to shove, could Kenny Pickett say to his agent, you know what, I want to play in this game? Potentially, but you also don't choose that agent without knowing that this is the direction you're going come January and late December. So I look at this and say, if there is an expanded playoff, that probably does fix this for the most part, where I don't think you'll see Pitt in the playoff and Kenny Pickett opting out, but maybe you will. I just don't know what the discussion is, but it's hard for anybody to say when you have generational money on the table that somebody should just go out and play an extra game that relatively speaking is meaningless when everything in front of them dictates that they're going to have millions of dollars very soon. So I'm with you. If Matt Corral wants to play, great. I would prefer, as a fan of college football, I want all these guys to play. It's more fun when you have Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker and Kyren Williams and Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson playing. But if they decide not to play, I'm not part of their family. I'm not in their inner circle. I'm not them. It's hard for me to say that I know what I would do. And you get that a lot. You get former players. You get radio hosts. You get podcast hosts. You get the average fan. That they make the statement like they know what they would do in this circumstance. And some of them are ignorant where they don't understand what's at play or that the agents are the ones telling these kids to sit out. But Herbstreit and Howard are not ignorant with this. They know what's going on. And I thought it was a bad look for them. It doesn't make them evil. It doesn't make them guys that hate the current players. But I just think they come from a different time where this was never on the table. There was no NIL. There were no agents being able to talk to players legally, and there weren't opt-outs. It's changed. Things have been different, and I have to think that going forward, we're going to see more and more of this. Maybe what they can do is add incentives where if you're an MVP, you get a bonus, or the winning teams in these New Year's Six games or certain bowl games all receive a finite amount of money. But for now, outside of the two playoff games and the national championship, every other bowl game has been diminished, and a lot of that is, and this is where people who were criticizing ESPN after this were valid, how much of what you watch in college football, when you're watching the number 9 team play the number 16 team, how many promotions are you seeing in October and November that are saying who's in? Right. Who's the four playoff teams? That starts to diminish the rest of the games if you're not in, if you're not part of this playoff. And who's doing that? It's ESPN. They have a weekly show where it's all promoting the top four. Well, guess what? If you're ranked 11th, or if you're ranked 15th, or if you're ranked 6th, those games now you're saying, okay, well, you've been telling us that we're not really all that important because we're not in. So why is this Sugar Bowl important, or why is this Peach Bowl important? And it becomes a valid thing. So I do think Herbstreit and Howard were wrong in the way they approached it. If that's how they feel, that's fine. I don't agree with them. But I did think that they were not quite being as honest as they probably should have been, because they know what's really going on.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, who owns all these bowl games? ESPN does. So ESPN wants the best players playing in them, and so they need to toe that party line a little bit.
And then, of course, the two bowl games that they don't own was the Sun Bowl that Central Michigan got added to within 3 days of the game, and then the Fox game, which got canceled, where UCLA, 2 hours before kickoff, informed NC State, hey, you guys have been out here practicing. It turns out we've been practicing walk-ons and linebackers at nose guard, so we're just not going to play tonight.
Yeah, that was a weird little situation where it seemed like UCLA might have known what was going on before and didn't say anything.
By the way, did you see NC State's counting that as a win?
Are they really?
The NC State's officially counting that as their 10th win. They're giving Dave Doran like his bonus for bowl win and all that stuff, because they say they were ready to play. UCLA wasn't. And in their minds, that's a win. And NC State's fully – again, we've had teams count national championships that shouldn't really be national championships throughout history. So I don't think NC State adding a 10th win to this season is hurting the game at all. So I think it's kind of funny. It's kind of like when UCF – have that national championship banner up at their stadium. Hey, it's up to you on what you want to consider wins at this point. We know who the real champions are, and we know if the games got played. But if NC State wants to count it as a win, I don't really care, but I think it's kind of funny.
But here's the thing. In 25 years, you go back and look at your record book and say, oh, I didn't know they won 10 games in 2021. And you're not going to look deeper into it. You're just they had a different season.
Is there a more fitting program to do that? Because NC State's one of those programs that every year you look and you go, wait a second, they were 9-3 and finished 17th in the country. Like, NC State is one of those rare teams that it's seemingly every year their record is better than you would know, and they're like ranked at the end of the year, and yet you look at their season and they had like one quality win, and they were lucky to avoid like the divisional champ from the other side, or they barely lost to Clemson in their heyday. So they're an odd franchise in general, but good on them to count that as their 10th win.
By the way, I sent you a tweet that said, in Clemson and Oklahoma's bad season, they combined for 21-5 with four regulation losses coming to New Year's Six teams. That four regulation losses did a lot of work, because Clemson lost to NC State in overtime, and they weren't in a New Year's Six bowl. So that they kind of – I feel like Stu kind of slid that in there. Five losses, only four in regulation to the New Year's Six teams. So I was going over their records today, because we were talking about, and the reason I was bringing this up is because there's such a big – we talk about that huge gap between, you know, even Alabama and the next group of people. But that next group of people has kind of a big gap too, in that Clemson and Oklahoma have these big down years. Turns out they only lose – to New Year's Six teams and NC State in this case. But a down year for those teams is five total losses. A down year for a normal team is five regular season losses.
That's a good transition now to the transfer portal and NIL, because for Oklahoma, you start to look at their body of work. They had a pretty damn good season. Now, they did lose Bedlam. They came back and won the Red River Shootout. But Caleb Williams officially in the transfer portal. Mario Williams, their receivers, also in the transfer portal. We know what they've done with their 2023 class, all the kids from Los Alamitos in Southern California that are now USC Trojans. And Oklahoma in the offseason, Brett Venables in, Jeff Lebby in. They kept the O-line coach. They're seemingly paying their assistants about as well as they can. But you're seeing the mass exodus. And I thought this transfer portal – it was funny. I was flying out on Monday night back to the West Coast. I was over in Florida for the holidays, and you had the Dylan Gabriel story of he was scheduled to be on UCLA's campus that day, and his old offensive coordinator, Jeff Lebby, who's now at Oklahoma, said, Caleb Williams is leaving. Are you sure you don't want to come here? And he packed his jets from Westwood, headed to Norman immediately.
Headed to the planes.
And That's a good business decision for Gabriel, because if Williams is gone, OU is a much more stable program than UCLA is, but it just shows you the volatility of this. And I guess he didn't sign anything. That's the weird thing is I know you're allowed a one-time transfer now with immediate eligibility if you're not graduated, but did Gabriel not have anything signed at UCLA? Like, was he not stuck there? It's truly the Wild West at this point. And as much as I don't like the NCAA and a lot of their decisions, the fact that they just said, we're sitting this out. We're not really going to control NIL. We're not going to control the transfer portal. I get the NIL stuff because I don't want the NCAA to make a lot of decisions on that. But the transfer portal stuff, they have to have some guidelines going on. And at this point, it truly seems like it really is the Wild West. And I
Well,
don't know what's going to
we
happen.
remember it used to always be these kids are locked in even if they're coach leaves. Now they're coach leaves and they all go with them. You look at Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma to USC. A lot of these guys were commits that he flipped, but there was a couple guys that went into the transfer portal and are going to come straight over to USC from Oklahoma. This is this is not about the institution anymore, that's for sure.
And how about the other USC? You have South Carolina got the starting tight end in Austin Stockner. They got a pretty viable quarterback coming over, that started a year at Oklahoma with Spencer Rattler. So it's becoming something where I understand in today's day, and I had this talk with some trusted people, my old line of work at NFL. I reached out to Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. And this was when you had the mass exodus of Oklahoma with the recruits leaving as soon as Lincoln Riley left. And then you looked at the other side when Brian Kelly left. Notre Dame stayed pretty stable. And I asked them, I said, do you think most kids, and I kind of already knew the answer to this, but I said, do you think most kids choose the coach or choose the school? And they both said, most kids choose the coach, but they should choose the school. And that's the way you should go. And what they basically pointed out to me was Notre Dame, Northwestern, Stanford, those kids are a bit different where they're generally choosing the school, but almost everywhere else, they choose the coach. And that's
Yeah,
why,
and the service
and
academy
that's why,
too.
you, oh yeah, of course, but they're not playing at the highest level either.
Right,
But when
yeah.
you look at Oklahoma, Oklahoma's program is far and away right now better than USC's, and frankly, probably will be for the next decade.
Right, and has been historically for the last 10, 15 years.
And yet, as soon as the coach left, everybody of note was jumping ship. And that's disappointing if you're an Oklahoma fan, but that's just kind of the way things are. And now you're seeing with Caleb Williams, the other thing is there has to be a lot of money on the table for him to join another program. Whether it's, I mean, look at Georgia. If Stetson Bennett leaves and JT Daniels isn't there, Georgia all of a sudden is a very viable option. There's a lot of people thinking, could it be an Auburn that's seeking a quarterback? Could Texas A&M be the school? They're seemingly paying every other recruit to go there. What if Caleb Williams comes there? They have a true freshman quarterback, and then Max Johnson, who clearly is nowhere close to as good as Caleb Williams. What if he goes and plays at A&M for a couple years? There's a lot of options for Caleb Williams, but I also just look at it now and say, are there any options that are truly better than Oklahoma? I don't know. It's hard to believe there is, but that's just kind of the way things are now. I'll just be the first to say, or not the first, I'm probably the 30,000th person to say this week, I don't know what the right deal is. I would say NIL, you probably have to just kind of live with where it is now, where it's not the schools technically making the payments, but it's everyone else providing the players for the money. But for the transfer portal, something has to be done to at least make it so there's some rulings on how this can go about. Because the Gabriel thing, that's tough for UCLA. You have the kid, he's committed, he's on your campus, and then the day he's there, he just picks up and leaves. That type of stuff should not be happening.
It couldn't happen to a better team, though.
Yeah.
Let's finally move on to a little bit of the rumor mill. We had the crazy coaching carousel, but hey, USC, Oklahoma, Florida, every Washington, all these major jobs, LSU. Add Michigan to that list. It looks like there's some reports saying that Jim Harbaugh is considering going back to the NFL. He's reached semi the mountaintop in beating Ohio State, getting Michigan to that playoff. Obviously, we saw there's a lot of work to get done as they got their faces smashed in by Georgia. And they still lost to Michigan State this year. But Harbaugh goes back to the NFL. What do you think for that Michigan job?
I mean, look, I get it in that he did take the massive pay cut. I'm sure with bonuses, he probably made back a lot of the money he gave up with winning his division, winning the Big Ten, and getting to a playoff. But if he thinks he reached his pinnacle at Michigan, and maybe he has, look, Harbaugh's always been the type of guy that doesn't seem to be long for any one job. You know, he built up San Diego, got the job at Stanford, built them up, went to the Niners, built them up, went to Michigan, now built them up. Maybe he's on to the next challenge. A lot of coaches seem to indicate that they like the chase of building a program, and then when you finally have to sustain a program, that's where it becomes arduous and a lot of things that coaches don't love. I thought he's in a pretty good position now where he has these young assistants in McDonald, and you know, he had the Broyles Award winner with his offensive coordinator as well. But you start to look at Michigan, and it's, can they do this year in and year out where they beat Ohio State and get to a playoff? It's hard to believe that they'll become the power that Ohio State is. And also, we don't know what he's being offered potentially with the Raiders or the Jaguars or with some program like that.
The Raiders might make the playoffs with Bisicki. You never know.
Yeah, the Raiders very well might be a team. And look, they have a pretty solid roster with what you would think would be a nice situation to go to. My hunch is if these reports are out now and they're with Bruce Feldman and guys that we trust, there's some real validity to this. And Harbaugh's the type of guy, he's always a wild card. Like, out of a lot of college coaches, he's the one guy that I thought, like, if you would have said to me a month and a half ago, rank these coaches leaving their programs, I would have put him before Brian Kelly or before Lincoln Riley. Sure. And yet he's still there because he made the playoff. But it wouldn't shock me if he leaves. And he might have a good reason to leave. I hope for college sake that he stays in college. I like rooting against Michigan. I like rooting against Harbaugh. It's fun if they're actually a team that can contend, where the last 6, 7 years, they were clearly third or fourth best in their own division. But if he happens to go, all of a sudden, that's a huge attractive job. And maybe Matt Campbell finally bites the bullet and says, I'll leave. Or as we mentioned, Dave Aranda, is that a too good of a job to pass up? I don't know. But considering Jim Harbaugh's past, it wouldn't be all that surprising if he leaves for the NFL, and it would be a huge story in January that would result in our last of the coaching carousel.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. I would I think there's a little bit more work to do. I don't, like I said, that's not the mountaintop of Michigan. The mountaintop is a national championship, and you were not close. You were kind of close, but you weren't close when we saw what happened against Georgia. That brings us to the college football championship game matchup. Number one Alabama, 13-1, versus number three Georgia, 13-1. That one loss being to Alabama. In Indianapolis, Monday, January 10th, UGA, 3-point favorites, over-under, 51.5. And Kent, let's do a quick breakdown of this game. Obviously, our best bets or upsets are good. This is the only game that we have. Hey, if we had done this yesterday, we could have put the K-State LSU game in here. But we're only talking about the game that matters. So break this game down for me a little bit.
Yeah, so when you look at this game, the first matchup, Georgia was the touchdown favorite. On paper, they looked to be the better team. And then Alabama just ripped them apart. They dominated the line of scrimmage. They were passing the ball for big numbers. And Bryce Young won his Heisman that day. For Georgia, I still think they're the most complete team in the country. Now, I will say, there's a clear, distinct advantage at quarterback for Alabama in this game. But there have been signs of vulnerability from Bama all season. Again, we mentioned the games earlier. LSU, they struggled, could have lost that game. Auburn pretty much was all but over, and yet they had that 97 or 98-yard drive to win the game in the final 2 minutes. You saw the Arkansas game was a back-and-forth shootout where Arkansas was making big plays through the air with a soon-to-be first-round receiver in Treylon Burks. But nonetheless, that is an Arkansas team that was uncompetitive against Georgia. And then you also saw they lost to A&M. They almost lost to Florida late in that game. Florida had a chance to, I believe, tie it up with just a couple minutes left. And then for Georgia, they ran the gamut. They dominated everybody. Now, I understand their best wins were a subpar Clemson team compared to where they've been and a Kentucky team that probably over-succeeded. But this is a Georgia team that against Michigan played a complete game that they didn't play against Alabama. Now, it will be interesting to see if Alabama what they do without John Mechie in this game. Remember, in the SEC title game, they had John Mechie, and he was a difference maker along with Jameson Williams and Slade Bolden and all those receivers. They're not going to be able to run the football down the throat of Georgia the way they did against Cincinnati. I expect Georgia's defensive game plan to be slightly different this time around, but if they don't get pressure up front with four or maybe with some blitzes, their secondary is still vulnerable, and Alabama will pick them apart. You saw Brooks step up in the semifinal game. You know, he's a freshman from Miami that went to IMG Academy. He had that big touchdown right before half against Cincinnati to give them the two-score cushion. He's going to make plays if they don't get pressure. We know what Jameson Williams can do. Slade Bolden's an underrated slot guy. They have good tight ends, but I think Georgia will invest in the line of scrimmage a little bit more than they did in the SEC title game. And as you've mentioned, and a lot of people mentioned, it's hard to beat a good team twice. I do think that that's valid in this game. And this game also, to me, David, everything is must win for Georgia. As much as we want to say Alabama is the dominant program and you should never make Nick Saban an underdog in any circumstance, especially against Kirby Smart, this is Georgia's game to finally win as a program. This is Alabama's probably one of the weaker teams they've had in the last 7, 8, or 9 years. This is the best team Georgia's had. If they can't win this go-around, then you really start to put doubt in this Georgia program and Kirby Smart that when will it be? Remember, Dan Lanning is leaving for Oregon. That defensive coordinator has had a huge input on this team. He will not be there next year. Alabama should be better next year than they are this year with Bryce Young as a junior. So I think Georgia wins the game. It's going to be close. I would be shocked if it's a 17-point win the way it was for Alabama in the SEC title game. Georgia, more pressure. The offensive line for Alabama looks a bit more like it looked throughout the regular season and not the way it looked in Atlanta whenever we watched them in early December. So the Georgia Bulldogs get their first national title in over 40 years when they had Herschel Walker, and they raise that golden burrito and win in cold and snowy Indianapolis, where the SEC is coming up the Big Ten territory this weekend to take over the city of Indianapolis. So I'm going to go with the Bulldogs to win. I don't think that Stetson Bennett is the liability the way that some people do. And I expect Georgia to have a more complete game, a balanced approach, and win the line of scrimmage the way they didn't the first time.
I'm not betting against Nick Saban. And as a matter of fact, I just put a money line bet in for him in that game as we were talking. All of what you said points to Georgia, you know, pulling this one out and finding it. But I just can't bet against – I can't lose any more money to Nick Saban by thinking that I'm smarter than him. So I'm going with Alabama plus three versus Georgia, and they're going to be my upset pick. I'm 6-9 in my best bet, 5-10 in my upset pick. So maybe I'm not the right guy to go with here. But I did get Air Force is my upset pick for the bowl games, and Wisconsin covered in my best bet. So I'm on a little bit of a streak right now.
Yeah, I had so here's kind of a funny thing on the side. I had Wake A&M. That was, of course, canceled in the Gator Bowl. I was going to go to that game, most likely on the morning of the 31st. But what's funny is we had a lot of family in North Florida. My brother lives in Ponte Vedra Beach, which is where the Rutgers team ended up staying in Ponte Vedra Beach. They stay at TPC Sawgrass. So they came last minute. I actually got stuck in traffic one time because all the police had to stop the street so the Rutgers buses could head down the street, and they blocked it out. So I had the circumstance where there was a lot of family in town. My brother is kind of member there, of a social member with Sawgrass. So they have the hotel there on the golf course. And I was able to stay there. You had the spa. I went over there. It's all Rutgers oriented. You're at the hotel. There's like the Rutgers side of things. And I thought, this would be way cooler if it's Texas A&M. It's not as cool when it's Rutgers, who were 5-7. So good on Wake Forest. Yeah, exactly. Good on Wake Forest to blow them out, because that's not a game that Rutgers really deserved to be in. And my best bet I hit, I went with OU. I felt good about it. For the second straight year, I was at an AEW live wrestling event in Jacksonville when OU was beating down an opponent in a bowl game. The year before it was the Florida Gators. This time it was the Oregon Ducks. So the Oklahoma streak continues. When I'm in Jacksonville and I'm at an All Elite Wrestling taping, that's when OU plays their bowl games, and that's when they dominate their opponents. So I was able to get my best bet. A pretty bad year, 6-11 on my best bets, but I did finish up $610 with my season tally on upset picks. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to see if Wake Forest could upset Texas A&M, and I'm not going to choose the upset in this game with Bama because I think Georgia wins, so I'll stay put at 610. You were able to make a good $105 with Air Force, and now you're trying to make $120 with Bama and get a little closer towards
and net will be up no matter what with you being up 600 on the year. So I'm trying to claw back a little bit, and not going to be able to get even on my best bet, but if I can get to 7-9, that's an okay season as well. So, okay, Kent, let's close out our every game in 60 seconds. We went 77% on the year, which was a down year for us, really. 20-9 in bowls, 665, 188. If we get this win, which is going to be Alabama is what we're going to call, even though you're picking Bama, we would end the season on 666 wins. So that just shows you how bad of a year we ended up having. Bama is going to be our pick, but because this is a must-win game for the Georgia program, let's have Georgia play us out. We'll talk to you guys after the championship game.